C2A. Number 18A.
We come to the next last subtone of love. We are still in that great question of how can salvation be achieved. And Mrs. Eddy's answer, well, it is really love that wants to bring about salvation. And that means that we are translated out of a material sense of things, out of sins, into our true spiritual selfhood, which never suffers. The next paragraph at the side note talks about suffering inevitable. So that's another indication of this salvation. The text is, was it just for Jesus to suffer? On his way to salvation, he suffered. Was that just? She says, no, it wasn't just. But it was inevitable. That's the point. So we have not to reason things out. Was it just for Jesus, who was so good and so sinless, that he had to suffer? Well, that's not the question. The question is that he had to suffer because that was his mission, the mission of soul, and that therefore it was inevitable. Love has always an inevitable plan. For not otherwise could he show us the way and the power of truth. If he hadn't suffered, he would not have been the mediator we saw. Only by showing us that he could deal with every sin, with every aspect of animal magnetism, only by showing that he was a way shower, or else he would not have been a way shower, he would have said, well, he didn't have to meet anything. So that is quite easy for him. We are different. We are born in matter and therefore have the struggle of matter and therefore sins of the flesh within us. So Jesus cannot be an exemplar. So he had to take the sins of the world on him and show that he would be able to deal with them completely. If a career so great and good as that of Jesus could not avert a felon's fate, then lesser apostles of truth may endure human brutality without murmuring. That's quite a point. You said, well, Jesus couldn't evade the suffering, therefore lesser apostles of truth will also endure brutality and suffering, but the point is that we should do it without murmuring, with the joy of soul, and not with the opposite. Without murmuring, rejoicing to enter into fellowship with him through the triumphal arc of truth and love. Can you see the tone of love? The reaching, the climax, entering into truth and love through the triumphal arc, really reaching salvation. So as to say, Jesus reached salvation. Love. Through what? Through soul. By taking on him the sins of the world and showing that they have nothing that they cannot pull him down. We have to do the same and show love has a plan for us. The plan of love, the design of love, is to reform the sinner. In order to reform the sinner, we must get rid of sinful sense and material self. That may mean suffering. If we do it without murmuring, just remembering that the great law is at work, the law of love as soul, then we will reach heaven. Then we will reach salvation, love, a little touch of love. We will enter through the triumphal arc of truth and love. And that's how Mrs. Eddy ends that tone of love as soul. Let's look back again what we have seen. What was the developing story through the seven subtones? We had love in its subtone as soul, showing that there is love at work wanting to save us, to take us out of the realm of material selfhood and bringing us into the realm of spiritual selfhood, soul. In order to do that, we can go through various steps so that it means something more than just a few terms. And so Mrs. Eddy shows that way through mind and showed really that first we must get the true idea of love and not believe just in salvation. Mind illumines that way and shows the course, and so we have to turn to mind to see how that translation from sense to soul should take place. When we turn to mind, mind says, I'm also spirit. Therefore, you must overcome the flesh and the world. That's the touch of spirit. You can't take the world with you. You can't take it with you, we say usually. So you have to overcome the world and the flesh. Only when you do that, then you can make the transition, now we come to the little touch of soul, the transition from mortality to immortality. And you don't have to go through death or through suicidal belief. You can do that in your consciousness. How can you do that in your consciousness? And you get the little touch of principle that says, you know, if you see everything from the point of view of principle, you only see ideas. And in that realm of ideas, there is no sin nor material selfhood. You see that that is really impossible in science. So go into science. Don't look at it from the human standpoint, how you can crawl out of the material sense of existence into the soul sense of existence. See from the point of view of science that error is an impossibility. And if you see that impossibility, then that scientific sense as life will support you. And you can see that science is that which will and sustain us on the way of salvation. Meaning what at the point of principle, what we had at the point of truth, that therefore sin must be removed from our consciousness. And if we remove sin from our consciousness, then we experience only that what consciousness entertains, and that is a sinless sense of things. And in this way, as you do that and go over it and over it, until the end, then the little touch of love will come in and just say, then finally when you do that, you will enter really through the triumphal arc of truth and love. And you are saved. Yes? Could you follow the seven? Easy? Very easy. Yes. Okay. So we have already done three main subtones. Love as mind. All that had to do, how do I establish a heavenly consciousness? Then love as spirit, saying within that heavenly consciousness we have to reflect the spirit without measure. We must have the total engagement, so to say, of love that reflects God in every way. And then we add the third subtone just now that says, and that brings you out of self, material self, into your spiritual selfhood, which is actually your salvation. Now we come to the next tone of principle. And there we see that the subject again changes very definitely, that here as a main tone epitome, we have that lover's principle says what? That through man's unity with love, we prove that love, main tone of love, is our life principle. Now, she is going to show us really that that principle which should determine our life should be that universal sense of love that really is willing to suffer also for the world, to take the burden of the world also on our shoulders, and that we should see that that what we want to demonstrate would not just be physical healing, that would only be a spin-off, but what we really want to demonstrate in our life is something much higher, namely that we free ourselves of everything that it does not coincide with a principle of life and of living, and that that principle must always be dominated by love, capital L, not small L. So that love demands really that we prove our principle. Can you hear? Love, principle. That love demands that we prove our principle. Now, what are the tones that go through the text in regard to love? We will see at once that there are different accentuations of love than before. Now, love is always, when it is demonstrated, what? You know what I meant? When love is demonstrated, love as principle, is what? Then love is really showing the peace of love, the rest of love. So constantly we have that sense of peace and rest, of sitting down really at the right hand of the Father. It's the Shekinah, that's also the realm of peace, of the God's abiding place, the Shekinah, that then the earthly mission, he said, is completed and that God's mission is fulfilled. Can you hear that you come to a certain sense of peace and rest and fulfillment within yourself? Very different than what we had before. How do we arrive at that state of love? Through principle. What is principle in this text? It's a short text. It's only a little bit more than a page. What is principle in here? Constantly showing, well, that principle is that which we have to prove. Is that which must prove. That must be demonstrated. That must be demonstrated through doing good deeds. Can you see now, principle is represented through spiritual power, proving, doing it, working, demonstrating it. And demonstrating what? The principle of being, that means the science of being, versus the counterfeit of principle. And we have about a dozen counterfeits just within a page. Namely, the counterfeit of principle is what? Personal worship, public worship, hypocrisy, then all the ancient school of philosophy, materia medica, scholastic theology, Jewish theology, national deity, God as a mighty potentate. Did you hear? It's always the same, huh? The counterfeit of principle, namely person, personal authority, personal doctrines, all that has to do with person. It isn't that she counterfeits, say, the system of principle with the atomistic sense of principle. Here it's something very different, namely that principle must prove what is love, and not people must tell what is the proof of love. So, in this consciousness, we really can read the text now and expect now what must be in it, that now that now love forces us to prove the principle of being and not just to obey personal authorities. I read it from the little touch of mind. Our Heavenly Father, divine love. So we start out again with the great tone of love. Demands that all men should follow the example of our Master and his apostles and not merely worship his personality. Can you hear at once principle? That love demands what? To follow the Master. Naturally, he stands for the idea of principle and not to follow a personality, the counterfeit of principle. So that the demonstration of love rests on a divine principle. So it is said that the phrase divine service has come so generally to mean public worship. Can you see? Counterfeit of principle is public worship instead of daily deeds, instead of mind, doing things, acting. You see, constantly here in this chapter on Atonement and Eucharist, mind always somehow has that tonality of doing things, building something, acting according to something. And so here we have love demands that we demonstrate not the personal sense, but the sense of principle, how through mind, through doing things. Through daily deeds. Is it difficult to hear three tones at once? We must be aware that we can do these things, say, in music, that we have no difficulty in listening to a symphony where at once many, many tones are played. And yet it doesn't disturb us. On the contrary, we feel this is a full tone. It's much fuller than if you just would have played one tone on one instrument. And it's only a question of exercising and culturing our consciousness that we suddenly begin to hear the music of it. You know, at first it seems to be the letter, and we have to put the letter straight and see how we can classify the main tone, the subtone, the sub-subtone. That is perhaps at the beginning a little bit of an intellectual activity and an intellectual demand. But the moment we then go over these findings and ask ourselves, what does it mean? We get the rhythm of it, we get the music of it. So that you can be quite sure that when you read afterwards that chapter with that culture, that you read it and it seems as if you would hear music, spiritual music, where just those tones of the main tone, subtone, sub-subtone just ring in your ear. You hear the melody in that music because it flows along a definite category of the word order. And you also hear the melody of it, not only the tone of it. And finally, you feel this is all full of a warmth and comfort and a great, magnificent picture that is presented to us. And it brings really satisfaction. We go to the next little tone. That brings in a little touch of spirit. The nature of Christianity, the moment you hear something about the nature of God, you have the tone of spirit, because spirit is the true nature. Not matter is true nature. True nature consists of spirit. So the nature of Christianity is what? Is peaceful and blessed. Can you see peaceful and blessed? You get the tone of love in the seventh day, of peace and rest and the fulfillment. So that nature is peaceful and blessed, but in order to enter into that kingdom of peace and rest, the anchor of hope must be cast beyond the veil of matter. Can you hear, Spirit? Casting beyond the veil of matter, casting really your nets to the right side, beyond the veil of matter into the Shekinah, into which Jesus has passed before us. The Shekinah was always a term or a symbol that was used really for the presence of God, the earthly dwelling of God. And in Jewish theology, it meant the divine manifestation through God's presence, which is felt in men. That's how Webster defines it. So it gives a sense of that peace and rest, of that heaven, so to say, on earth right now, and gives peace to the struggling heart. If we cast our nets really on the right side, beyond the veil of matter, and this advance beyond matter, can you see again the tone of Spirit coming in? Must come through the joys and triumphs of the righteous, as well as through their sorrows and afflictions. Like our Master, again comes in the tone of Spirit, we must depart from material sense into the spiritual sense of being. Isn't it interesting how always when Spirit comes in as a main tone, as a subtone, as a sub-subtone, it's always that sense, part with the wrong and put your, throw out your nets to the right side and follow the line of Spirit. Like here, we must depart from the wrong, namely from material sense, and turn towards the spiritual sense of being. So, again, we can see, what have we seen? From time to time, you go back and reiterate what we have already built up. Love, as principle says, you have to prove that principle to be love. How are you going to prove it? As the point of mind, by daily deeds. That's your service. That's your divine service. That's church service. Your daily deeds, that's really the church service. And you get the sense you have to do daily deeds. What are these deeds? What is necessary to see that these deeds are not misdirected? You have to see that these deeds are really turning away from matter and towards the spiritual sense of things, beyond the veil of matter, advancing beyond the veil of matter, she says, into the spiritual sense of things. If we do that, then on that way we must be perseverant, we must be untouched. Soul asks then the following, come to soul. The God inspires, walk calmly on. Can you see again the way of soul, from sense to soul? Now it is walking calmly on. It's no more stick to the guns. Huh? It's no more don't go back. Huh? Go forward. Now that heavenly sense of love is already established here and says, if you are God-inspired, that means if you have a sense of love as principle, then you can walk calmly on, because then you know on what you can rely on, what foundation of principle you can rely on. So the God-inspired principle, walk calmly on, so, though it be with bleeding footsteps, though the footsteps are bleeding, I still walk calmly on. I don't murmur anymore. The murmuring is left behind, so to say. And in the hereafter, they will reap what they now so. You see, again, love that is assuring our reward. The pampered hypocrite, that's the very opposite of the God-inspired on line 8. See what she does so often, she gives a statement and then the counterfeit of it. Either first giving the positive statement and then the negative statement, or first giving a negative statement and then the positive statement. Because that's really practice that Christian Science must show forth what is truth and what is error. Both has to be shown so that we become aware what is truth and what is error. So, the counterfeit here is the pampered hypocrite may have a flowery pathway. See, that's just the opposite of the bleeding footprints. So the God-inspired has bleeding footprints, unfortunately, and the hypocrite, he has a jolly good time, he has a flowery pathway here, but he cannot forever break the golden rule, the rule of soul, and escape the penalty due. And see, love is that which says you will have penalty as long as you believe in the wrong. Only if you don't no more believe in the wrong, then there is no penalty, because it is impossible in science. Yes, so that was that principle operating as a rule that says you can rely on it that sooner or later, here or hereafter, that rule fulfills itself and you will get as a reward what you have done before.